Hello, hello, and welcome back to Arthouse Garage, the snob-free film podcast where we make arthouse, indie, classic, and foreign cinema accessible to the masses. I am your host, Andrew Swetman, and in this episode, we are continuing season 5 of the podcast, which is Contemporary Asian Filmmakers. In the previous episode, we looked at Bong Joon-ho and his 2006 film, The Host. Today, we are moving on to his 2013 feature, which is called Snowpiercer. Snowpiercer is a fascinating action film and Bong's first to be filmed primarily in English. It tells the story of a dystopian future in which all surviving humans live aboard a train called Snowpiercer, which is endlessly circling the planet. It stars Chris Evans, Tilda Swinton, John Hurt, Kong Ho Song, and many other pretty big names. I'm thrilled to be joined once again by Omaya Jones, film podcaster and programmer of the Arkansas Times film series. He's been with us all season long, bringing so much insight into these films and filmmakers. Omaya, how are you and what have you been watching lately?
I'm doing well. I've been watching a lot less lately than I did sort of in the peak quarantine era of the year, but there are a few films that I watched that I think are worth mentioning. One is called The Loveless, which I think is the first feature film by Kathryn Bigelow, and it stars, well, I can't believe I'm blanking on his name.
The Loveless? I can look it up real quick.
Well, it's Willem Dafoe.
Willem Dafoe.
I can't believe I couldn't remember Willem Dafoe. And it's an 80s film that I think takes place probably in the 50s, and it's sort of this ode to those biker movies like The Wild Ones or something, where a group of bikers come to town and they wreak havoc. I also watched a documentary by a director named D.A. Pennebaker called Town Bloody Hole that was recently put on the Criterion Channel and recently got a Blu-ray release. Oh, wow. And the premise of the film is that one night in the early 70s, Norman Mailer and then a panel of feminists got together to talk about feminism, and like the structure of the event was that each of the women participants gave us a 10-minute speech, and then Norman Mailer would ask them a question to ponder, and then they would respond to his questions. And his attitude, he's very much patronizing and very chauvinist, but the story of the film is that They filmed this really without clearing it with anybody. So D.A. Pennebaker was working with Norman Mailer, and they agreed to film this, but they didn't tell any of the panel participants. And so the way the story goes is that he was running around with his camera crew all night trying to avoid security. Wow. Before things sort of settled down, he was able to film it. But then the film reels set in his studio for several years until Chris Hedegaard, who he would later marry, came to apply for a job. And then she was going through just footage that he accumulated and found this and thought it was worth doing. So she edited it together and then they put it out.
Wow. What was the title of that again?
Town Bloody Hall.
Town Bloody Hall. And that's on Criterion Channel.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That sounds very interesting.
I highly recommend it. And it's only like 82 minutes long. So it's not a huge commitment, but it is a fascinating document.
Yeah, I'll have to check that out. I love a nice short movie too. You know, actually, just the season of life I'm in with two kids, I frequently, like on Letterboxd, I'm like, okay, let's sort this by time. How much time do I have? So I actually really do appreciate that, because being pressed for time and loving movies sometimes are challenging to go together. But that sounds really interesting. I've watched a couple of things. Did I talk about Devs on here with you, the show Devs?
I don't think so, no. Okay.
I mentioned it, I think last season I'd started it, and I finally finished it. This is Alex Garland, who directed Ex Machina and Annihilation, and also was a writer for Never Let Me Go, and I believe Sunshine, that Danny Boyle film. So quite a sci-fi mind, and this is a TV show for FX, and I really liked it. I finally finished it. It's a 8-episode miniseries, and it is kind of about free will, and I can't really talk about what the central conceit is without kind of spoiling it, because over the course you kind of learn what it is gradually, but it's very heady and dark and moody. And, you know, I think it's getting pretty mixed reviews. I really liked it. So I'll recommend that. And I think Alex Garland is, I'm just kind of on board to see whatever he does. And it's always been pretty fascinating to me. So I'll recommend Devs. And then I watched Following, which is the first Christopher Nolan film, a feature from 1998. And it's pretty good. That's talking about short films. It's like 63 minutes or something. It's just over an hour. But yeah, I really did like it. It's, it feels very lo-fi compared to anything else he's done. It's black and white. It's shot in like Academy ratio. So it's kind of, square almost. And it's about a guy who he's a writer and he follows people to sort of draw inspiration for characters is kind of what he says at the beginning. He ends up getting mixed up with a guy who is a burglar, basically. And in Christopher Nolan fashion, there's some jumping back and forth in time, and there's some twisting plot things that happen. And I enjoyed it. Have you seen Following before?
I have. It's been a while, and I don't really remember much about it, to be honest.
Yeah, I can see that. I can understand feeling that way. Like it's not as memorable as any of his others. I didn't mean I can see that as in you sound like you forgot it. I mean, like I can understand like that's probably going to be the case for me too, honestly, but I did enjoy it. Like I definitely, like, I think not as good as Memento if we're looking at like his early stuff, but yeah, there you go. I thought, you know, with his new one out, kind of prepping for that and, watching some old Christopher Nolan thing. So I think the only other thing I haven't seen of his previous work is Insomnia, which, you know, is generally not a favorite among fans. So I do want to watch it, but I'm a fan of a lot of his other stuff. But anyway, Following, I thought was pretty good. It's also on Criterion Channel, and I think it has a disc release as well. So there's some good special features on the channel you can watch there as well. All right. Well, without further ado, I guess let's get into today's movie, which is Bong Joon-ho's Snowpiercer.
This chaos. 1,000 people in an iron box. 18 years I've hated the train. 18 years I've waited for this moment. This is your world. The train saved humanity.
The engine lasts forever. The population must always be kept in balance.
I said sit down.
Passengers, eternal order flows from the sacred engine. We must occupy our preordained position. I belong to the front. You belong to the tail. Know your place. Keep your place.
Those bastards in the front think they own us.
We'll be different when we get there.
What do you say?
We take the engine. And we control the world.
When is the time?
Soon.
All right, let's talk about Snowpiercer. So, as I said, this is from 2013. It is primarily in English. I listened to an interview earlier today, and Bong Joon-ho said probably like 70% is English. There is some Korean as well, and a few Korean characters. But I think it's his first that's primarily in English, although he had done something in Japanese previously too. And so in an interview that I watched, he talked about, you know, the language barrier with that was kind of a learning experience for this. But anyway, the film is, it's a dystopian future. As I said, the world is frozen. So I really like the setup of this, and it opens with like news, audio clips telling what's happened. Basically, to combat global warming, the government has sent, I guess the world government's kind of collaborated to send this, chemical into the atmosphere on rockets or something. And it's meant to cool down the world. They overdid it or something went wrong, and the world is now frozen and almost everyone is dead. And the survivors live on this train called Snowpiercer. It's called that because it can bust through the snow and ice, and it's going around the world. And that's kind of the general setup. The train itself is divided. It's a very long train with several cars. The rich people live in the front and the poor people live in the back is basically the setup. So it ends up, as other Bong Joon-ho films are, about class and wealth gap and sort of wealth inequality. And so it's kind of symbolic of society. So I think it's a really interesting and creative setup. And within that, we have characters. It focuses on Chris Evans' character, whose name is Curtis, and he is he lives in the back of the train. He's a bit of a reluctant leader for a lot of the people there. They live basically in squalor. It's kind of industrial feeling, and they basically dream of revolting and kind of getting to the engine at the front of the train and taking control of the train. There's also they're strictly enforced with I guess the police, military style law enforcement, who are very harsh. Tilda Swinton plays Mason, and she is sort of a second in command or a higher up person. She's always dressed very nice, and she comes back and lectures them about their place in society and why they have to stay in this part of the train. And that's how the society has to work. There has to be a top and a bottom and all of this. And so she's the villain character, and basically it follows them as they do start a revolt and kind of traverse through the train. And that's kind of the general plot of it. It's got some other things going on, but I guess let's talk about those things. I thought it might be good just to first talk about the train itself and how it is a symbol for society. And there is so much classism kind of tied up in this story. And also the fact that it is adapted from a graphic novel. So Amaya, how many times have you seen this film? I'm curious. And I understand you've read some of the graphic novel too. So maybe you can talk about the relationship there as well.
Yeah. Watching it for this was the second time that I'd seen it. I think I may have seen it. I'm going to say just the twice. And I have read the first volume of the graphic novel. I believe there's two volumes. And in terms of the specific plots, it's very different. But in terms of the themes, it's pretty much the same. And with the idea of the various sections of the train representing different parts of class, which is something that Bong Joon-ho comes back to in his films a lot. Mm. Another film that I watched sort of recently was his first feature, Barking Dogs Never Bite. Mm. And like it, along with Okja to an extent, and Snowpiercer and Parasite, are all dealing in one way or another with various forms of class and like how society is structured around class and what that does. Mm. And so with Snowpiercer, what we see is, of course, all the poor people in the back, the middle class in the middle. And then even like as you get towards the front of the train and people become wealthier, what you'll see these different changes where like the windows disappear again, right? So there are no windows in the back of the train. Mm-hmm. There are no windows in the front of the train. The storytelling, the use of color changes where, on the ends of the train, there's sort of these muted color palettes. And then with the middle class, you get these, brighter, more vibrant colors, a full range, of colors are used in that section of the train.
So that's interesting. I watched a panel from a film festival that Bong Joon-ho did back in 2013, and he talked about just the challenges. So as far as the color goes, I wanted to talk about the production design, because mm-hmm. I think it's really interesting. Yeah, in the back of the train, it's very grungy and dirty. As I mentioned, kind of an industrial feeling. Like all the people have like dirt on their faces. Like it's squalor, basically. And as you move forward, each train ends up having a little bit of a different feel to it. And they like gradually get, you know, quote unquote fancier. And Bong Joon-ho talked about making basically 26 different train car sets to film on. And, what a challenge that was to keep things interesting. And also, just always filming in the confined space of a train car, which does seem like an interesting thing. And it makes for an interesting viewing experience too, that, you know, we look out the windows at some things sometimes, but we never leave this train. And there's some interesting set pieces, like action pieces around that as well. That some of which felt very graphic novel-esque, I think. There's one moment I really liked where they have to go through each of these doors. So as they first escape the back of the train, they let out Kang Ho Song's character, whose name is Namgun Min-soo, and he is like a security expert, so he can break through these doors and kind of like Han Solo style can like hotwire them and open them up. And he's there with a family member who, what's the character's name? That's
His daughter.
His daughter. I couldn't remember if it was daughter or niece or something. Yona.
Yona. Yes. Yeah.
And she has an interesting ability to see slightly into the future or through the walls, or it's not exactly clear. Chris Evans asks her if she's clairvoyant. And so there's a few moments where he's about to open the door and she knows what's about to be on the other side of it. And that happens a few times. I thought that was set up really well, because there's at one point, kind of where this comes to a head, she's like, don't open the door. And it's kind of this tense moment. Suddenly door opens, and then there's a music cue, and that's just a really odd scene of these security guards wearing these hooded masks that are just showing their mouths, and they look like executioners or something. And it's really eerie, and I think that was a moment of the tone of this that I really liked. And after I watched it, you know, I was like, oh yeah, this was based on a graphic novel. That seems like maybe straight out of a comic book, that image of the security guards. But yeah, there's some really well-directed moments like that he's good at building tension. And then there's a lot of action scenes, like fight scenes, again, in this enclosed space, and it uses the light. There's a moment when they go through a tunnel, so it's just pitch black and they have to stop fighting, except then there's some night vision. And so he throws a lot of really creative things into these action scenes. There's one where the train's on a big curve and they're able to basically shoot their guns through the windows across the curve to the other cars of the train. I thought that was a creative touch as well. And then there's like a school train car, and we see children learning. And then there's like a nightclub and some like a spa kind of thing too. And then of course we get to the engine room at the end of the film, and it's got its own kind of design as well. So yeah, the production design I think is a strength of this. It's really kind of diverse, but it also, it all feels, it feels futuristic in a way, but also grounded, I think, somehow in reality. But yeah, do you have any thoughts on the production design other than that?
Yeah, well, so the first thing I would say is, you know, you liken some of the action to something out of a comic, but I would say that one of the differences, essentially what he took from the comic was the concept of the train. And a lot of it, other than that, is sort of his own creation, right? Because the comic is not like an action book by and large. There's not a lot of there's not a lot of combat, not a lot of guns and shooting and things. There are a couple of action scenes, but it's nothing like the film itself. What I think is interesting about the production design is, so I think at the time this was like one of, if not the most expensive Korean production. And so it had a fairly large budget, but not necessarily a large budget for an action film. And he's talked about how just how much planning and design had to go into the storyboards to figure out how you were going to design the train cars and what was necessary, because there wasn't a lot of extra money to spend on things that are cut. And so again, his process is to meticulously storyboard everything and then kind of shoot what you need. And so a lot of that storytelling work is figured out in the storyboard process. I also think it's interesting that the way the film is formatted, you know, it's a train. So, you know, instead of like Parasite, where class is symbolized as up versus down, yeah, right? Mm-hmm. Here it's left versus right. And there are a few key moments in the film where Chris Evans' character has to make a choice. And so he'll look to his left and then he'll look to his right. And that is sort of what propels the film forward. Tony Joe, are you familiar with Tony Joe?
No.
He's a video essayist, or he was. Hmm. He stopped making video essays, I think, several years ago. But he made a YouTube channel called Every Frame a Painting.
Oh yeah, yeah. I've seen some of those. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So he talked about Snowpiercer and the left versus right thing in sort of a shorter video, that I think is worth checking out.
Yeah.
But and he likens it to almost like a video game, right? There's a in a video game, there's always a point. like a side scroller where you have a choice to go left or right. Chris Evans in this film is always propelled right or forward because he feels like it is his job to be a revolutionary. And the idea of a revolution is something that it's in the film that's not in the source material.
That's one thing I did hear in an interview. He talked about, he said he literally went into his favorite comic shop, and it's a French graphic novel, but they happened to carry it only in France and Korea, is what he said. And he said he read the whole thing standing there in the comic shop, and he was like obsessed with it. But then the one thing he did say there too was that he brought in all the revolutionary aspect of it, that the concept was there, like you're saying, but no revolution. And this is interesting because in the film he talks about past revolution attempts and all this, so I did think that it probably had some action in it, so that was surprising to me, but that's all I know at this point. The revolution aspect of it I think is interesting, because that's essentially the whole plot. He's just trying to get to the front and take over. It's not exactly clear. I guess the plan is to kill the driver, and there's an interesting kind of god complex that it sets up with the engineer, and he seems to people follow him as with a religious fervor, and they almost pray to him, and then the kids sing a song about him, and it's an interesting setup. I really like Tilda Swinton's character. She is kind of almost cartoonish, but of course she can pull that off because she's incredible and everything. She gives a speech early on about you wouldn't put your shoe on your head, and again kind of talking about the way society's meant to function, and if we don't all stay in our spot, then society crumbles. And there was an interesting thing Bong Joon-ho said in this interview too about the hand gesture that she makes, like a turning your hand, kind of like almost like turning a sink on or something like that, that she does a few times. And then I didn't quite catch this connection, but it was made clear in this interview that, I guess it's going to get into spoilers if we talk about where that comes from.
I was going to ask if you wanted to get into spoilers.
Okay, let's hold off. We'll talk about that at the end. But yeah, that's an interesting thing that ends up having kind of a haunting kind of a resonance to it. Let's talk about the characters in this. So Chris Evans is the lead, as I mentioned, and I think he does a pretty good job. It's I mostly like Chris Evans in things, and he is kind of he definitely has a leading man look. And in this, he's very kind of tortured, and we don't find out why until the very end. But I think he mostly carries this pretty well as the lead actor. Bong Joon-ho talked about casting him and basically just having seen him. He kind of wrote him off originally as, you know, a Marvel actor, basically. It sounded like, and someone had to convince him, no, he's actually done a lot of kind of smaller indie dramas and things, and saw him in some different things, and then kind of okayed it and brought him in. But what did you think about Chris Evans in this, Omaya?
I love him. I love Chris Evans. You know, I'm glad that his career sort of taken off. There was a period of time where there were these articles that he was talking about potentially retiring and things. Before he was cast as Captain America, and things sort of turned around in his career. I've always thought that he is an interesting actor, in that don't take this the wrong way, but he's similar to a Brad Pitt, right? And that I think his body type sort of pigeonholes him to some extent. And it sort of it characterizes the way you look at him. But I think he has more range than that. I mean, it's different than
he surprises Brad, you people in that called, way. Yeah.
Yeah. Like it's different in that people have called Brad Pitt a character actor in a leading man's body. And I'm not quite sure Chris Evans is a character actor.
Right.
But he has more range and depth than I think you would think just if you were just to look at him and his physique. And Bong Joon-ho talked about how when they cast him, one of the hardest things was covering up all of his muscles, because he's supposed to be this guy from the back of the train. He was sort of emaciated and not properly
malnourished. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so like they had to like hide all of those muscles under like clothes and things.
That's funny.
But yeah. And also like, you know, shout out to Chris Evans. I think a lot of times with some of these movies that maybe on paper are riskier, mm-hmm. it's always good to have star power, right?
Yeah.
Like, mm-hmm. like he's doing the same thing that like Robert Pattinson or Kristen Stewart does, where they're using the fame that they acquired doing huge mm-hmm. Tentpole films to get funding for either indie art house stuff,
yeah.
or in this case, a Korean director doing a big budget English language movie for the first time.
Yeah. Yeah, like how many people were scrolling through Netflix and saw Chris Evans and thought, oh, this sounds interesting, and like would never have watched a Korean director's film, you know, but because Chris Evans is there. So yeah, I agree. And that makes sense. That contradiction in sort of physical form and what you would expect him as an actor, that reminds me of something, this kind of off topic, but on a podcast I heard talking about, another actor with a similar kind of dichotomy or a different kind of contradiction in what you would expect is John C. Reilly. I thought that was interesting because he's like a big kind of bulking guy, but he always plays sort of a this was on the podcast Film Spotting that I listen to a lot, that he always plays someone who feels inadequate, or think about like his character in Chicago or a lot of different things he's done, or the Sisters Brothers. He sort of has this hulking form, but this kind of gentle, and like maybe doesn't feel like he's as masculine as he should be. Like that's anyway. So that, I think that's interesting. I like actors that, that kind of can play with that. And I think you're right that Chris Evans has that as well. He does, like he cries in this movie. I think that's, an interesting thing that Bong Joon-ho actually brought that up in this interview as well, that, he wanted someone who could kind of push that, but also have the action hero kind of chops. I really like, I'll say one more thing about Chris Evans. I really like him in Scott Pilgrim versus the World. It's a super different kind of character, but he plays this like skater bro, and he's just really funny. So like he really has some good comedic chops. And then like Knives Out, we see the comedic side of him big time recently in that one. But yeah, he can do really well the dramatic stuff as well. You're right. Let's talk about Tilda Swinton again. So I mentioned that she kind of plays this cartoonish, seemingly cartoonish character. She has these glasses that kind of magnify her eyes, and she's kind of prim and proper amidst all this. She's in the back of the train where everything's really dirty. But her character's name is Mason, and Bong Joon-ho talked about meeting with her and wanting to work with her, but not having a part for her in the script he was working on, which was Snowpiercer, and realizing that he could switch the gender of the Mason character because it was originally a man. And like, oh, Tilda Swinton can actually do this really well. And Tilda Swinton has a certain, in some things, a certain androgynous character. Like, she's played male characters before, so I think she's probably the perfect person to play that kind of a role. And it is interesting because I got a sense watching it, it's like, it's interesting that this woman would be part of the higher ups in this train, because it does feel like, I don't know, patriarchal in a way. But yeah, so that somehow wasn't surprising to hear, but it was really interesting that was how that character came about. What do you think about Tilda Swinton in general? Are you a fan of her?
Yes, I'm a huge fan of Tilda Swinton. I want to give a shout out to a film that's coming out on Blu-ray on October 6th that she's in.
Okay.
I first saw it, I think my senior year in college, for a class called Digital Art and Culture. It's called Technolust.
Technolust.
And Tilda Swinton plays a computer programmer who is working on a project that results in the creation of a computer virus where four Tilda Swintons... or maybe it's three. Maybe it's three Tilda Swintons, and then there's the computer scientist, which is her, so that makes four. But they come to life into the real world, and they start spreading a technological virus to humans. And it's a very strange film, but I love it. Also like that, Orlando, I don't know if you've seen that, where she plays like a 16th or 17th century nobleman who then becomes a woman, and it's sort of this exploration of sort of the way your gender defines your roles in society. And you know, she ends up, and that character Orlando ends up living for like 200 years, and then at the end of the film, she's in the 20th century. And so she makes all of these wonderfully strange films.
Yeah.
And then like in the last, I would say 15, 20 years since The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, she sort of burst into the mainstream, but she still is able to maintain like this dual career path of like strange, really strange stuff.
Yeah.
And then more mainstream fare. And she's like, I don't know. She's just a fantastically wonderful actor.
Yeah.
That, you know, she makes any movie worth seeing because you never know how she's going to approach a character or a role.
Yeah. I'm looking at her IMDb. Yeah. I forgot. Like she's in The Avengers. She plays a pretty big character mm-hmm. and then Doctor Strange. But yeah, she's also in so many odd things. Yeah, there's a David Bowie video before David Bowie died where there are a couple, it's not quite clear, but she's made up to look exactly like him. And it's really interesting. They're like sitting on the couch in matching outfits. It's such a weird video, but I love it. And then, so she goes there into some odd places. With a lot of her characters. Oh, and I think about her in Grand Budapest Hotel as well. She plays like a really old woman. She's made up to be like very old, and she's really funny in that too. Yes, Tilda Swinton is great. And so her character in this, she's taken hostage basically towards the beginning, and as they are moving up the train, they have her handcuffed, and she kind of helps them out. It's a kind of an interesting relationship because you kind of grow to like her a little bit, at least I did. Even though she's pretty hateable at the beginning of the film. And I think that's another thing that like she could pull that off as an actor. But I mentioned Kong Ho-song as the security expert, and he's interesting too. I honestly didn't recognize him at first. It took me a while to realize. I was like, I thought Kong Ho-song was in this, and I'm like, oh wait, that's him this whole time. Because he has this kind of greasy hair, and he's playing, I guess, against the type that I've seen of him do. I know he's in lots of things that I've never seen, but he's kind of angry and sullen a lot of the film, and collecting this drug. So there's this drug that many people on the train are addicted to, primarily wealthy people. Because they can afford it, I guess. And it has an interesting name. I can't recall the name of it right now. Do you remember the name of that drug they do?
It's like Kronos or something.
Yeah, something like that. Starts with a K. And they are working for that. So like the more they open the doors, the more they earn of that that drug. He and his daughter. And it ends up having a sort of an interesting thing as well. But they. When they get to a nightclub towards the end, everyone's on this drug and everyone's kind of strung out, and it's an interesting plot element. But I keep wanting to talk about spoilers. Maybe we should go ahead and, is there anything else like not spoilery you want to talk about with this film? Because I want to talk about his arc a little bit, but it gets into the ending of the film as well.
Yeah, I think we should dive into spoilers because there's, like the only thing I think to say about his arc that maybe not as no it is spoiler. Let's just go into
spoilers. All right, spoiler alert. Go watch Snowpiercer if you haven't. I think it's on Netflix, so it's pretty easy to get to. But so let's keep talking about his character. But so Bong Joon-ho in this interview said that the Kong Ho-song character is sort of his mouthpiece in the film a little bit because they get to the end of the train and. Chris Evans wants to, okay, let's go in and meet the engineer and take over. But he says, no, we need to leave the train. When it turns out the drug they've been collecting this whole time is an explosive. So they have a huge amount of it and they've built a bomb out of it. They want to blow the side of the train open and escape into the frozen tundra. And he is fairly certain. He has a theory that things are warming up and it's livable again. And so if we're looking at the sort of the train as a symbol for society and looking at the class structure, that would seem to say that Bong Joon-ho is saying, okay, here's the train. Here's how things are working with upper class, lower class, middle class, and where capitalism has gotten us basically and saying maybe we need to throw that all out and try something else. Like let's leave the train. Whereas no one else even sees that as an option and thinks he's crazy for even wanting to set foot outside. I think that's an interesting, the way that plays out was not what I was expecting. I wondered if we would ever leave the train and we don't until like the very, very final moments. What were you going to say about something spoilery?
Well, I mean, I just, it's the way that throughout the film, everybody else is concerned with whether they should go forward or backward, mm-hmm. whereas his character is very much concerned with what's going on outside of the train, right? Mm-hmm. So it's not about forward or back. It's about going outside of this environment. Mm-hmm. And so, like, his character is the one where it's almost like he's saying, the sort of class struggle that you guys are concerned with is not the real issue. Like, we can all just leave the train. We have, there's another option, mm-hmm. right, besides the train. And so, like, there's this scene where they go past a spot where he knows people who left the train and tried to trek out of it are frozen. And he notices just that the snow has melted. The position mm-hmm. is different. You used to not be able to see all of them. You can see more of them now. And so, like, he's very much attuned to what's going on outside. And if you notice in the school scene, right, where they're learning propaganda, essentially, in that car. But throughout the film, he's sort of teaching his daughter, who's a train baby because she was born on the train. So you call them train babies. And he's teaching her about the outside world. So he shows her dirt. He's telling her just how things work on the outside, how to grow food and things, so that she has this information once they're no longer trapped in the train, because that is always his goal, is to get off of the train.
That's really interesting. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And I think that, yeah, that's so, like, exiting the train is like the final out at the end is kind of a cool way to kind of break out of, I think, the plot that's been going. They end up getting, so let's talk about that gesture, I guess. So the mm-hmm. the kind of hand turning gesture we learn is that there's a couple of children that have been taken from the rear of the train at the beginning. We find out that they are being put to work in the most dangerous part of the train. They're the only ones small enough to fit in this crawl space and turn this certain crank all the time. And so that hand gesture is meant to, and we see the engineer does this as well, is meant to symbolize we all have our place, including child labor, basically. And so it's sort of a big symbol of, like, just how messed up this all is. And the engineer is interesting too. It's Ed Harris, who he's, I think, got the right presence for sort of the person there's some expectations about who's this engineer going to be. And I think he does a good job. I always think about him in the Truman Show, kind of playing a somewhat similar character a little bit, like in charge of things. But he, again, also has like a sort of a, he probably has a God complex, but as in charge of everything. And he speaks about the way things work with like a religious fervor and with a certainty that nothing will ever be different than this, which is another, I guess, clue that something could be, that they could kind of defy that. What do you make of that kind of final scene with, in the engine room?
So I guess, first of all, I want to go back to the Tilda Swinton character.
Yeah,
I guess I always wonder, is the implication there that she came from the tail section, or do they just used to take children from the middle class section? Because to me, the implication is that she was once, when she was a child and she was small enough, that she...
Oh, that was her job.
Yeah. I guess, like, that's how I read it. Without sort of trying to do the math in terms of, like, how long they've been on the train and how old her character is supposed to be. But I wonder if, like, you know, once you get old enough,
so graduate into high society a little bit.
Like, your reward for that, for doing that job as a child, is to sort of become at least middle class or upper middle class or something.
Interesting.
Ed Harris's engineer character, I think, is where the movie starts to fall apart for me, is that when the characters who are sort of just speaking in like ideology, right?
Yeah.
They're sort of speaking theme.
And
that I think one of the critiques of the movie is that it's too on the nose.
Yeah.
And I think those kinds of things are like where that starts to feel real to me. I wasn't really moved by the speech or the dilemma of the Chris Evans character necessarily at that point.
Mm-hmm.
Something about the end of the film just always falls flat for me.
Yeah. I want to agree. And so I was going to say that so we typically don't do a ton of like review kind of talk on this podcast, but this is a movie too that I didn't quite connect with. And we kind of talked about that the other day as we were texting. But yeah, so as far as I think I overall would say I enjoyed this and I'm glad I've watched it. And I think it has so much interesting stuff in it. But for me, it wasn't quite the emotional experience that The Host or Parasite was. And I think there's a few reasons for that. I think what you're talking about, where, yeah, at the end, the dialogue gets so, yeah, elevated and ideology laden that it's, it kind of loses believability. And I think there's some of that even from the beginning. I think too that I didn't have a real sense of character really for Chris Evans, especially at the beginning. And you kind of have this sense that he has a secret and we don't learn what that is till the end. And basically there's, early on in the early days of the train, there was cannibalism and he, didn't do enough to stop that from happening. Essentially, that's kind of the short version. And he has this long speech explaining all of that. I think that speech too, the writing just didn't quite pull me in. And I mean, maybe by that point I was kind of at a distance emotionally from it, so that it didn't, kind of hook me back in. But I don't think it was as much Chris Evans' fault as it maybe was the script. I think that kind of gets to the overall issue for me, I think, is the tone of it. It's hard to say whether we are in like a, it wants to be grounded and also kind of fantastical at certain moments in a way that didn't quite mesh for me, which is interesting because in The Host and in Parasite, that's something I've praised specifically is the mixing of tones. But in this, it just didn't quite, quite work. So we have like the school car scene, where we have almost this like absurdist feeling the way the characters are talking to each other. And that just doesn't mesh with the back of the train. We're trying to be so gritty and feel kind of realistic. So yeah, I think for those reasons, it kind of lost me along the way. And then I think some of the action scenes didn't quite, it gets a little repetitive too, which I mean, it's all in these enclosed spaces. So that seems like a real challenge to not make it repetitive. And some of the production design, like, so I really liked the production design in general, but then some of the moments at the end, like the nightclub scene, and then right before the engine car, there's like the room with all the kind of grinding gears. And I was like, okay, someone's definitely going to fall in there. But I don't know. I just didn't, that sequence from the nightclub to that moment, to that area, it kind of got too out there for me, which I don't know, it's like weird kind of criticism, but it almost felt like The Fifth Element or something, like where it's so kind of gonzo that it just doesn't match everything else, I guess is the issue. But again, I really am glad I watched this, and I think Bong Joon-ho is a filmmaker who I'll take a chance on. Yeah, so what other issues do you have with the film?
I think everything you said about the Chris Evans speech at the end, I think is why the first time I saw it, I didn't necessarily care for it. Mm-hmm. Watching it again, though, I guess instead of issues, I will praise the movie in some respects. Like some of the action scenes, even though some of the action does get repetitive once they get towards the front of the train and it's just sort of, it just becomes a chase. Mm-hmm. But like the blackout fight where then they call for fire from the back of the train, like that.
Yeah, that is really cool. Yeah.
Like that. That's like a super cool sequence. Even though I think like the first, I don't know, 20, 30 minutes of the film where it's all about when the revolution is going to start, it's kind of a slog for me to get through.
Yeah.
But once the action starts, right. And with the scene where they've connected a bunch of carts with wheels and they're going to wheel them through the doors to hold them open to the other compartments of the train, like that, I think is like just this top notch action filmmaking.
Yeah.
And I think Bong Joon-ho does a lot just to keep things interesting visually, like even in that school car scene, even though it maybe it's a little over the top with the way Alison Pill plays that character.
Yeah.
There's like lots of things happening. There's lots of camera movement. Like he really plays up just the insanity of that situation. So I don't want to sound like I'm too harsh on it.
Sure.
I think it's my least favorite Bong Joon-ho film that I've seen. But yeah, I'm glad that I watched it a second time.
Yeah.
I can't see myself revisiting it again anytime soon.
Yeah. I wonder if a second viewing would, ease some of that for me too. I think like, see, I agree. Like once they bust through the door, that it gets really exciting. And as you're continuing to see more and more train cars and like what's outside of the usual environment we've grown accustomed to, like that's really compelling. It's like, what's going to happen next? And it kind of keeps me going for a while. But yeah, then it just kind of fell off for me again, tone wise. But yeah, I still think it's such an interesting concept that there's so, it's really thought provoking, even if I didn't love the execution of it. Yeah. So there's our, tell us how you really feel. There's our opinions about this. But yeah, let's see. Oh, another, this is another kind of quibble I had with it was, so yes, I love the blackout scene. And like we, as I mentioned, when they first see those bodyguards with those strange hoods, and then like that whole sequence I think is great. And then that's at the end of that, when they capture Tilda Swinton. And that was all really compelling to me. It got a little, I think for later action scenes. So I mentioned that scene where they're going around a curve and shooting across the train. I thought that was a kind of a clever thing that felt comic booky to me. So you're telling me that's not in the comic book, but, really, I mean, I kind of got it in my head about like, that's too far away. Like there's no way. It just felt really unbelievable, I guess. But then, so like, I just wasn't really loving that. And then, there's a, some fighting in like this kind of spa area where it's like, there's a lot of doors and stuff. I don't know. It was not super compelling action for me past that sequence you talked about.
I was going to say, it's just challenging because, so there's this quote where Bong Joon-ho was asked about the difficulty of shooting and tried such the difficulty of shooting inside such an enclosed space. And he talks about how he and the DP started to refer to it as a hallway movie. And cause I mean, if you think about it, it is.
Yeah.
So not only does the left right thing, work as a storytelling device, it's also something once you decide to set the whole movie on a train, you're sort of locked into.
Yeah.
You know? And so then the question is like, how do you do this to keep it interesting? And I think overall the film does a really good job of keeping it interesting, but there are just a few times where it maybe either feels repetitive or in terms of the dialogue, it's too on the nose. But then again, when you look at some of the discourse, maybe subtlety is overrated because I don't know.
Yeah.
Sometimes you got to really just hammer it home so that people get it.
Yeah, I could absolutely see that. I mean, and like, as far as action movies, like as far as like bad action movies I've seen, I don't think this is a bad movie at all. Like this has more creativity, you know, in its 5-minute opening than some action movies I've seen in the whole thing. And I'm probably too picky about action movies in general, but yeah, so I really respect this movie, I guess. And I'm glad it exists. And I do encourage people to see it. Despite those issues, it just was not to the level of The Host or Parasite for me. And it sounds like not for you either, but okay. Amaya, you sent me a quote from an interview, and I'm going to read it and then we can kind of talk about it. And it kind of gets back to that, the overarching theme of the train as society. So it says, "The train in Snowpiercer, with the rich living it up in the luxurious front carriages and the poor subsisting in squalor at the back, is a fast moving metaphor for that very system." And then, quote, "The train explodes at the end. The survivors must go outside. Now they are free from the train, but we don't know what will happen to them." So is he saying that this is what society should do, that we should blow up the train? And then the quote is, "Yes," he whoops excitedly, "and then we all go outside and freeze together and die." Which is a funny quote there from Bong Joon-ho. So, yeah, what do you make of that?
It to me, it paints the director as a sort of a playful cynic. And maybe a playful pessimist, because he seems to be always in good spirits and he's a fun guy and creative guy, but there's sort of like a nihilism embedded in there into his worldview. And then I think even if you look at some of the way his films play out, there's a question as to whether or not you can ever really transcend these class barriers. And I wonder to what extent his view is just that it's a constant struggle that you're always sort of fighting.
Yeah.
And then at the end, we all die together. I don't know to what extent that is supposed to be literally the end of the film, though. I assume that hopefully they make it.
Yeah, I think so. So that's interesting, too. So like we kind of noted in The Host that at the end of that film, it's like snowing outside, which mirrors the end of Parasite as well. And that's like, I don't know if I'm reading too much into to kind of drawing a connection there, but obviously there's a lot of snow in this as well. And I, for me, as I thought about like the symbolism of this film, it's sort of like outside of this is a frozen wasteland that like, yeah, this is all there is kind of thing. And so I don't know if it's just pointing in the same direction, saying in the host, I really think about it more with Parasite, that at the end of that, it's cold and bleak. And the way I read the end of that film, which I'll try not to spoil Parasite if you haven't watched it, but, there's kind of an interesting moment there. And I read that as a tragic moment, whereas I think there are other people who read it as just kind of pointing towards something hopeful. And so that would seem to fit with, you know, this cold and desolate world that we must, you know, somehow live in. And so maybe that's a recurring theme. And I guess because the end of The Host is not really a super happy ending either. Like it has its hope as well. But overall, I'd call it a pretty tragic ending, despite the connections that are formed there. But yeah, I don't know if I'm reading too much into that, but maybe there's a connection.
Perhaps. I think of The Host as being sort of bittersweet, though. You yeah. know, there's this familiar reconciliation that happens, and there's this child that is sort of saved from abject poverty. Parasite, though, like my reading of that is very nihilistic in that.
Yeah. You know,
well, I don't want to spoil Parasite for people who haven't seen it, but I feel like that ending is much.
Yeah, there's like a dream of something better that is dashed, basically. Yeah. And so it's almost like I feel like that's a theme I've seen in different things. So like in Snowpiercer, if it's, you know, let's blow up the system, even if it means there's nothing else and we all die. Like, is it better to live in an unjust society or just to call it a day on society at all? But that's a provocative question that, you know, I don't necessarily read, Bong Joon-ho as a nihilist in that way. I don't know, thinking about something like some of the themes in Fight Club where it's like, they just want to burn everything down, like kind of the anarchy of that. It's maybe kind of getting at a similar thing. Or I think about, have you seen a movie called Cabin in the Woods?
Yes.
Yeah. The ending of that, which again, I don't want to spoil, but there's a kind of an interesting character choice made that, sort of spells doom for some other people. Basically it's, you know, if this is the system, then screw the system and like we're better off without it maybe. So I don't know, it kind of that just popped in my head as possibly analogous to the attitude from that quote from Bong Joon-ho. But that is interesting. Well, have we said all we need to say about Snowpiercer at this point?
I think so.
I think we may have. Snowpiercer, very interesting film, very creative film. Bong Joon-ho, I do think, is one of the best directors we've got these days. So I think anything that he's made is worth a watch. So check out Snowpiercer. As we look ahead to the last two episodes of this season, we are moving on to a Japanese filmmaker, Hirokazu Koreeda, looking at his film Shoplifters next, and then his newest film, The Truth. I've seen Shoplifters before, and I really, really liked it, and I'm excited to revisit it and discuss it here, and then to look at The Truth, which is his first English language film as well, as Snowpiercer was for Bong Joon-ho. So looking forward to that for next time, and I guess we'll get into that. You've seen Shoplifters before?
I have seen Shoplifters. I've seen a couple of others of his films. I'm excited to see The Truth because I have not seen that yet.
Yeah. Well, join us for that next time. And until then, we will call it a day. Thank you for being here, Omaya.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Well, if you want to support Arthouse Garage, you can leave us a rating or review on your podcast app. That really goes a long way into helping new people find the show. You can also follow us on social media at Arthouse Garage on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, and Letterboxd. We also sell t-shirts on the website arthousegarage.com/shop. Some cool movie themed shirts there. And you can sign up for our email newsletter, arthousegarage.com/subscribe. Thank you so much for listening. And until next time, keep it snob free.